Welcome back to The Right Heart, the Catholic podcast that believes that a heart guided by solid spiritual formation is a heart we can follow. You are listening to episode 9. I have a lovely guest today. I'm so excited to have her. Her name is Molly Walter, and she is a fellow Catholic wife, mom, and blogger. She blogs at mollymakesdo.com. It's pretty much adorable. We are talking, though, today about kind of a tough topic, miscarriage. It's a topic that's familiar to many of us mothers, but it's something that we don't talk about much. Molly has written beautifully and honestly about this topic, and a few months ago when I found her blog and I was reading through it, I had had a miscarriage of my own in the fall, and so much of what I read was so encouraging and affirming of what I was going through, and I knew that I had to have this precious soul on the podcast when I did start recording. So, Molly, welcome. I am so glad to have you here.
Thank you. I am excited to talk to you today.
So, Molly, I wanted to get started by kind of asking you to give us an overview of your journey as a mother, maybe how long you've been married and when y'all started trying to have a family.
Sure. My husband and I just celebrated a few weeks ago our 7th anniversary.
Oh, wow. We're doing 7 this year as well.
It's fun. That means we've been together a decade. But I'd have to do the math. We were kind of one of those, we were really good friends people before mm-hmm. we dated. So that whole, when we officially became a couple, is very different depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
It's probably a lot longer for if you ask our friends than if you ask us, because most of them replied to, well, I thought you were already dating when we finally told them that we actually were.
Oh, that's
so cute. That always makes for a bit of fun. So, yeah, we've been married for 7 years now, and we have one little boy here with us, and he is 4 years old. And then we have our 3 saints in heaven who followed after him. It took us about a year and a half to become parents for the first time with our son. And then we had our other experiences after he turned 2.
Okay. So I can't even begin to process what 3 miscarriages, 3 little souls in heaven at this point must feel like and what that journey has been for you. But how are you doing now as far as healing after miscarriage? What has been your process of grief maybe after each one up to this point?
You hit on something just right off the bat there, is that it is a process of grief. And you always hear about those, I think it's like the 7 stages mm-hmm. of grief, mourning and acceptance and anger and all those things. And in miscarriage, it's really no different. And that's something I think is actually hard always to understand until you've walked in those shoes. I know for certain I didn't understand what an intense process it is mm-hmm. until I'd actually walked in those shoes. At the moment, we're in a good spot. We agreed with our doctor after our last one that we needed to take some time to figure things out, to reconnect as a husband and wife, to take time to heal physically and emotionally. And so we took some time off in this last 6 to 7 months. And we're just now getting back to the point where we're like, okay, I think we're ready to handle whatever comes next, whether it's good or more bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a process. I would even address it to my family, my friends. I'd say, you know, right now I'm in the mourning period. I'm really sad. Or right now I'm in the angry period. I mean, I'm mad. I'm mad at myself. I'm mad at everything that everyone does and everybody else has quote unquote better luck than I do, you know. And then there's even a sarcastic period where you just, the only way you can deal with it is kind of making yourself laugh through it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a process, and it's really no different than if you were mourning someone that you had connected with for longer, that had lived a larger life. I don't even want to say a fuller life, but a larger life on Earth, it's still that intense emotional roller coaster that grief just is.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind me asking how far along you were for each of your miscarriages?
Oh, no, not at all. I consider it kind of a blessing and a curse. Part of me wishes they had gotten farther, and part of me is glad that they ended sooner, just because the farther along you are, the more complicated things are. My first and my second were lost somewhere in the very early stages, but first we found out at the 2-month point. The second, because automatically I was eligible to come in for early ultrasounds and early doctor visits, we found out around the 6.5-week point. And then my third got the farthest along, and once again, that was about the 8 or 9 week point, even though with the third one, we had actually gotten to see the baby, gotten to see a heartbeat, which we hadn't had with the other two. What I experienced with the first two was what they call a blighted ovum or an anembryonic pregnancy, which is in the very early stages, things just stop developing. And they're still not quite sure what goes on when things stop and what causes it in those early stages. We do know, because my daughter, which was the last one, got further along, not only did we get to find out that she was a girl due to testing later on, but we also got to figure out what happened to her, which was the result of a trisomy, which some people might recognize as the word, you usually hear it in relation to things like Down syndrome. It's the replication of a chromosome. And she had the chromosome replication on her 16th chromosome, I believe it was. And that's just, it's just no good. The baby might grow for a while, but in the end, it's not compatible to life.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you if you had submitted your precious little one's names to the Shrine of the Holy Innocents.
We have, that is just such an amazing resource, and I'm so glad you brought that up right off the bat, because I think it's one that all women, and I'm even going to say, whether you're Catholic or not,
absolutely,
it could be an amazing resource for you, because it's somewhere where these people, there's no question that these people believe that your baby was a baby, and
yes,
it was its own unique person, and they're going to pray for you, and they're going to pray for that baby. And it's, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're going to agree on the little points of theology or anything, that those people that run that shrine, that provide that resource, really love and respect what these families, what your family is going through. So yes, we have submitted our baby's names there, and it's one of the first resources I give to anyone I know that has been going through that, because it can be such a comfort to have that finite acceptance of, this was a baby, this was a person.
And you know what I'm just thinking too is we should explain where it is and what it is too. Do you want to do that for listeners?
Sure. The Shrine of the Holy Innocents is part of the Church of the Holy Innocents that's located in New York City. And in this shrine, they invite you to submit your children's names, and you can do it online to what they call their Book of Life. And once the child's name is in their Book of Life, they light a candle in their memory, they pray for them at a special mass each month, and they also, you can actually opt to receive a certificate of life in honor of their child, which for some people I know, we personally, I never opted to receive that. I couldn't really tell you why, but I know for some people that's just something physical that they get to have that proves that
there was something,
this happened and this person happened. And it's for any child who has died unborn, basically. And it's just, it's a lovely lovely place and a lovely, lovely ministry.
Mm-hmm. And especially if you have a miscarriage that is more early on, like Michael and I had about an 8-week mm-hmm. miscarriage, 6 to 8 week miscarriage. And when it's so early on like that, and you don't, you know, you don't have a belly yet and the baby is so mm-hmm. little, it's so easy to think, you know, did this really happen? Was this really a person? And whenever we did that through the charity and advice of a friend who suggested it, I just felt like I had, or we felt like we had just a confirmation that there was a dignity, a dignified life there. And it was so wonderful.
Absolutely.
So I will have that website in the show notes. It's free. You just go to the website. It's, you know, you click on Shrine of the Holy Innocents and you can enter your baby's name and kind of their, I guess, the date that you lost them or the month that you lost them, and even write a little note in there to them too. And they will send you a certificate. I think you just get it emailed to you and you can print it out. But it was so helpful, so healing. I wanted to, kind of moving on from that, Molly, ask you, what has been the most difficult thing for you, I guess, when things that people say when you have a miscarriage or just comments that they make when you tell them? I know that was something I struggled with really badly for a while. I was so frustrated with people's responses.
Absolutely. Well, I think to start it off, I think it's very rarely that you're going to run into somebody who really wants to, for lack of a better term, stick it to you. They don't mean to say something that's going to upset you. And
that's
hard to keep in mind when you're emotional and you're in grief and you're in shock and maybe you're going through the angry period or one of those other phases, is that rarely, I'm going to absolutely say rarely, someone's not trying to rile you up or put you down or tear you down. But I think it's two things. I think, one, people don't get it. And even in Catholic circles, and especially when it's early on and there's no pictures, there's nothing. I think even in Catholic circles, even when we're surrounded by people who are supposed to understand that life is life and whatnot, it's hard to understand unless you've gone through it. And it's hard to know what's comforting. And it's hard to know what's not. So I think a lot of what gets said is well-intentioned or just kind of, they just don't get it.
And or they just don't know, and they kind of revert to the first thing that comes to their minds that they may have heard before. I think a lot of people don't, they just don't know what to say. And so they kind of say just kind of the common thing that they think they should say in the situation, mm-hmm. which is not, it's not helpful.
It's not always, absolutely, it's not always the best. I know in our first couple, we got a lot of those well-meaning but kind of empty, generic greeting card kind of phrases kind mm-hmm. of thrown at us, for lack of a better term, like, let go and let God, and you know, everything for a reason, and da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And when you're sitting there just finding out that this has happened to you, none of that makes sense, and none of it is helpful.
Because you,
honestly,
I think
I think the best thing you can usually say to a woman or a father, whoever's been going through that, is just that you're sorry, mm-hmm. and you're here for them.
I think I completely agree with that. The most comforting things that I heard when we had our miscarriage was, I'm so sorry. How are you doing? And even people, a few people who thought to follow up a few weeks or a few months later and say, how are you doing with that? Those are the people that, I mean, maybe four people out of everybody who have, you know, who knew about it. I think just, I'm so sorry. That is a simple response that gives dignity to the situation. And
absolutely.
I think for me, I wanted to mention that I had so many people say, oh yeah, that's so, you know, that's really common, right? You know, one out mm-hmm. of every four pregnancies is going to be a miscarriage. And like that, and even my doctor, I'm like, that's supposed to make
like
me feel
better. That was supposed to be comforting. And you're sitting there going, that doesn't matter. This is my baby.
Yeah.
This is my baby. And even if it only gets to those first couple weeks, you still have hopes and dreams and joys. You've already invested so much. It doesn't matter that it's 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 3, mm-hmm. or it was nothing that you did, or, oh, you'll get pregnant again. I know a friend who blah, 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 blah. It's almost, and like I said, I think it's a lot of it's unintentional, but it's kind of trying to push it aside. And I think people don't understand that it is a grieving process and there's no timeline on it. Mm-hmm. People want to help you get better as fast as they can because they love you. And they don't want to see you suffer. But they don't understand that it's a process. And it's a long process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, I'd say, with miscarriage. And I just kind of realized this only with my last one, which was my third one, is that I don't think I really start to grieve it until my due date has passed. Because mm-hmm. there are so many milestones in those 3 to 6, 7, 8 months that you have to get through. And guaranteed you're going to know somebody who's pregnant around the same time. And you're going to see somebody's ultrasounds, and you're going to see somebody's gender announcements and birth announcements. And for me, I just don't feel like it even starts until I get to that due date.
Mm-hmm. I was going to share with listeners that it's interesting that I happened to be recording this podcast interview in the month of June, because that would have been, I would have a newborn baby in my arms right now if we hadn't have lost our baby. But it is also beautiful, as I've been reflecting this month, that I wouldn't be doing the podcast if I had a baby in mm-hmm. my arms. So I feel like every once in a while in our crosses and struggles in life, the Lord shows us a little bit of what he's doing. You know, his ways are so Absolutely. Far above our ways, but it's humbling to think that if things would have gone my way, because I really wanted my baby, then I wouldn't mm-hmm. be doing this right now. And so I do hope that the episode is blessing somebody out there right now who is struggling with this. And I think that, I know Katie, I'm sorry, I know Molly has still a lot more to say on it too.
Nobody.
So Molly, I had another question that I wanted to ask you about. One thing that really struck me on your blog was the idea that you feel sometimes like you wish you had a sign on your back when you're out and about with your little 4-year-old boy, that the rest of your kids are in heaven. Because you have been open to life. You and your husband have been as open to life, have given your yes just as much as the next couple who has 5 kids or 6 kids or 4 mm-hmm. kids right now. And so can you speak to that? I really want to give listeners perspective if they don't have that on reality, just be kind of schooled in our experience.
Sure. Yeah, that... When I talked about earlier how I feel like there's a sarcastic phrase, I think that yeah. Particular part of my writing came out during one of my sarcastic phrases where I just kind of needed to be able to laugh at myself. But I still think it holds true. There are times, especially when you're around bigger families or you're in a more traditional, conservative church, where you just want to be like, I'm not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You read so many things out there online about, oh, these horrible people who are only having 1, 2, or 3 children, and that clearly must mean that they are working against us and they're trying to do all these horrible and awful things, and you're sitting there going, this is not me, this is not my choice. I think one of the best things that's coming from what I've been involved with online and sharing this story is the number of women who I know personally who do have large families and have dealt with the ups and downs of large families. And the number of them who have come to me and just said, I never realized it. Mm-hmm. I looked at these 1, 2, 3 child families and I always thought, oh, if only that was me, and they must be doing something right. They really must know their NFP or something like that, and they never really thought that it could be anything
mm-hmm.
else.
I know that I used to have that mindset when I was younger and just mm-hmm. getting married and having kids, that I would go up to a Catholic family with multiple kids, and I would be like, "Oh, your family is so beautiful," because that's kind of like the, at least in a lot of super faithful Catholic circles, you know, that we do understand life. That's kind of the mindset. And it just took me just being schooled by life to realize that a family with one child or two children, and, you know, and that's, you know, I know a family who is absolutely phenomenally incredible. They have two children and they are older, they're older parents now, and they were not able to have more than that. And it just hit me one day how much I respected these parents and these incredible teenagers that they had. And I was like, why am I even wondering why they didn't have more children? That's ridiculous. They are phenomenal, and our parish would not be the same without this family. So you really have to be, it's just perspective, and it's learning that. And that's charity too. I think making yourself grow in perspective is charity to others.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's something that I hear from a lot of families like mine, is that we see all these big families getting this praise, which is not undue. They go through a lot, and they sacrifice a lot, and they deserve it too. But so many people I've heard just say, like, I want someone to come up and tell me that my 1, 2, 3 child family is also beautiful and also amazing and also doing good things. And sometimes it makes all the difference when you're sitting in church and you're surrounded by all this and the homilies about the blessings of children, and Pope Francis has come out with another thing praising the big family, and you're just sitting there going, what do I even have to offer? And to have even one person come up to you and say, you're doing good too, could make all the world of difference.
Absolutely. I love that you made that point. I think it's okay to make that point, and I think it's important to do it on a platform like this, and just remind people that we have to see beauty everywhere it is and not be so have that narrow mindset. And I think just life schools you in it for sure. Molly, I wanted to ask you as well about your faith and how you're, obviously it's been a struggle, I'm sure, with your faith dealing with this cross of multiple miscarriages. I mean, I've had one, I cannot imagine 3 in a row. But how does your formation, your faith, kind of talk you down whenever you're feeling the envy, the disappointment, the anxiety? That can you trust in God's plan for you? Does he have plans for good and not for woe for you? Can you talk about what you've learned and how God helps?
Well, I think first I have to say is I'm still learning, and I think that's true for everybody. But one thing I find interesting about my whole journey with this is that I'm a convert, and I became officially Catholic in 2012. I think I'm horrible with remembering dates and years. Yeah, it would have been 2012 or 2013, whenever we started this crazy journey.
Wonderful.
And when I knew by the time that I officially said I wanted to convert, I'm ready to join the Catholic Church, I said I knew I had to be on board with this whole crazy family idea, because that was a big stepping stone for me, coming from my background and my ideas about what marriage and children and all these things were supposed to be about. And so it was a big thing when I had that Easter vigil, that I remember talking to my husband saying, I'm ready for more kids. I'm ready to let go of the control that so many of us try and have over this. I said, I'm ready to do this. I can do this. And I was kind of cocky about it in my own mind, because I was like, I have accepted this. I am great. I am an awesome Catholic for doing this. And that means I'm going to be rewarded for this.
Like, so you already had your first, your little boy, before you became?
We already had our first.
Okay.
And so I was going into that Easter vigil just thinking, it's going to be great. We're going to have this awesome family life, and we're going to just have like 5 or 6 kids, all going to be as great as our first, and we're just going to be awesome.
We're going to say yes to God.
The very next month, sure enough, we were pregnant. which was a shock because it took us so long to get our first. So I'm like, okay, clearly this is a sign that I was right.
Yeah, wow.
And that was the beginning of the next, now over 2 years, of all of this struggle. And talk about a kick in the shins, for lack of a better word. It really brought me down a peg right off the bat. And I remember telling some friends, I'm like, what? I did everything that was right. I have some icons in my house. I have holy cards. I've got holy water. I got little statues. I'm reading all the books. Like, I got Chesterton. I've got all of these things. Oh, did I miss something? Like, did I miss a packet in RCIA? Like, what's going on? Because clearly, I still have it in my mind. Like, this, if I've done everything right, I should be getting the A in class for all the work I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one happened. It was like, oh, man. Okay, well, maybe I missed something. Maybe I'm missing some deeper understanding about what this all is. And that's when I wrote a post for a friend on her blog about really the moment I really started to understand what being open to life is. And I think that was one of the first lessons I had to learn, was that so many of us get taught that being open to life is being open to having all of these children and having to put clothes on their back and feed them and shuttle them around and get them into good schools and do all this stuff. But there's also another side to that, and a big side to that is being open to when things don't go good.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have beds that aren't slept in and clothes that aren't handed down and things that aren't done the way you expected to them. And I remember feeling kind of like the door was open when I realized, like, it's not just being open to life, it's also being open to death, because you can't have one without the other. And it's a hard lesson. It is really hard, especially when you're looking at it and saying, I've had to learn this through actual experience. I didn't just open a book and say, oh, hey, Saint so-and-so had a really good quote about this and I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to learn that and kind of embody that. So it's been a road, and it hasn't been a smooth road. There have been days where I've wanted to hang up my hat and say, you know what, I'm going back to the way I used to do things. This is too hard. I don't want this. It's kind of my moment in Gethsemane. You know, take this away from me. I don't want it. I don't want to be someone's mentor. I don't want to write inspiring things and tell people how meaningful it was to them, because I don't want to do this. But you get through it. And sometimes those things that kind of drive you crazy are the things that get you through it. When you have that person saying, I don't have the ability to put this into words for myself, but you've done it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, okay, so maybe there was a point to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely wasn't the point I was preparing myself for 2 years ago, but there's definitely something there. And I think as rough as it is, I'm a better person for it. I think my marriage is better for it. I think my relationship with my husband and my son are better for it, even though it's been hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing in the Catholic community that we have an understanding for, is that our faith doesn't rest on things always going well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I can turn to these friends who have these same beliefs as I do, and they know that we're all supposed to have these things go on. We're all going to go through these ups and downs. We're all going to go through these struggles. And that's part of just being a faithful person.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jesus wasn't exempt from having to go through some really horrible things, and even having his faith tested and his determination and his will tested. So
I feel like I have to sit with this for a minute. You really just are so profound, Molly. I'm so thankful I was able to have you come on for this episode. This is so needed. Every Christian wife and mother needs to have this perspective, and even beyond having children, having the perspective to realize that saying yes to God is saying yes to things that you could not even imagine.
Absolutely. Mm. And And it's so much more far-reaching, I feel, than just children and being open to children and the wonderful and awful things that you might have to go through because of children. It's also about marriage, and it's about your life, your work life, your life with your family and your friends, is that if things are going rough, if things are hard, that doesn't mean you're doing something wrong.
I love
it
that.
It just means that you're experiencing the world that we live in, and there is a plan for that, and there might be something more that you would have never imagined that your life is going to ask of you. Mm-hmm. And I think part of faith is being able to step up to that plate and saying, okay, well, I figured out my life was going to be the 5 or 6 kids and the minivan and all of this, and now I'm looking at my life saying it might be the 1 or 2 kids in the sedan, and what else am I supposed to do with it then? And not backing down from that. And that's a little scary, more than a little scary. I know a couple weeks ago I was even thinking about just that and saying, maybe I'm supposed to be doing things for other people's kids. And that hit me like a sack of potatoes. The idea that maybe my time and my energy and my resources, if they're not being spent on kids that are filling up my house, maybe there's something I'm supposed to be doing for others. And that was hard. It's like, really? You want me to do all this for kids that aren't mine? And then, of course, I thought about it. I'm like, oh, well, you know, charity and humility and all those, you know, supposedly really good things. I'm like, yeah, that probably would be a good way for me to learn all that. I kind of see what you're doing here, God. Thanks.
Molly, I wanted to point out, kind of as we're wrapping up the episode, I really saw or I heard in what you were saying that we are not doing something wrong if we have raging emotions about our suffering in life. It is our faith in the form of good formation. It's our minds talking to our hearts that helps us get through things. And the emotions are natural. They're going to come. Our job, the job of a strong faith, I think, is to be able to rein those in and speak truth to them and not tell them that they shouldn't be there and not tell them that they're not legitimate, but to speak truth to them. And I think that one thing that I just feel like needs to be said more often, because the opposite is said so much, is that God is always going to give us something that is harder than we can handle. I hate when people say God never gives us more than we can handle, because it's not true.
I am right there with you. I can't stand that, because I just sit there and go, you're kidding me, right?
I'm like, what have you been through? Let's talk about your life, because my life. But yeah, it's just that idea that he gives us more than we can handle, because otherwise we wouldn't remember that we need him, and otherwise we would not fall into his arms.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely miscarriage is definitely one of those times, because it is such a silent suffering. It is more personal in so many cases, especially with early miscarriage. When it's
Absolutely.
Not obvious. So, and it's a time when I totally fell into Christ's arms, and he did not judge me for being angry and raging and all these natural emotions. He just let me be there and then spoke truth quietly, over a period of time, and he helps you heal. And I think, I mean, in my small experience with grief and suffering with miscarriage, that is what it was for me. It took a little time, but just that constant speaking truth and going back to those common themes of trust and God is in control. He's got a plan and a purpose. And,
absolutely.
And
I don't want to run us too late, but I think one thing that gets said to us a lot is that, you know, maybe this was part of God's plan or all this. And I actually think when you get told that, it's okay to say, no, that's not right. God doesn't want this for us. He doesn't want us to suffer. He doesn't want our babies taken from us. He's mourning that just as much as you are. And that death, that taking away is never part of his plan. But what is part of his plan are the things he puts in your path to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's your church or your family or your friends, or some little blog that somebody reads that's really just been your sounding board to get those emotions out, that it's not about that God has planned for this to happen to you and has made sure that you're going to be tough enough to get through it. It's more that he knows that this is happening to you and he wants you to get through it.
Mm-hmm. And I think also that he always has a soul in mind when he permits suffering, even if it's mm-hmm. just your soul. He has yep. your soul in mind, or that one reader that you will keep her from going over the edge. Or
yeah,
just I try to think about that, because I think a yes to God is always a yes that's about souls. And I yep. say, Lord, if right now me having a tough time in my marriage or dealing with this child that is making me want to go crazy, if that yes is somehow has a purpose and is saving a soul, then yes, 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 I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I think one last thing that's important to remember is that, in keeping with what you're saying, so he's got a soul in mind, is that he had a soul in mind when he helped you and your husband create that baby.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how long that baby was here, no matter what he did in his life, he picked out and he made that child for you, for your husband, for your family. And there's nothing, not even death, that can separate that intention. I know I've had some friends go through this and they say, well, it's hard to come to grips with it. This baby wasn't for us. And I just want to say, no, this baby is for you. And that baby is still here for you, and it's praying for you, and it's there for you on Sundays when you're taking communion. And that child is always going to be there for you, and that soul was always meant for you, no matter what.
I love that point. Molly, you have been precious and such a gift to this episode, to this podcast. I cannot wait to see the fruit of listeners calling in, emailing in after this show goes to air, because this is a much needed episode that's going to bless. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I do that thing all the time where I find a new blog or a podcast that I really connect with and I love, and then I can't ever find it again and I forget about it. So if you are thinking that The Right Heart is one of those podcasts that you don't want to forget about, then I really encourage you to subscribe. Just go to the website and enter your name and email address. And when I produce a new episode about twice a month, I will send you a note. Remember that I also have a link to the podcast through my blog at humblehandmade.com. And if you're curious about upcoming guests or when I'm about to get new show notes up on the blog, definitely make sure you like the podcast Facebook page or follow me at Erin Franco on Twitter. All right, guys, until next time, peace be with you and God bless.